This episode is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. And I'm going to ask you something, and I want you to think about it. Are you interested in bond trading? Because at Interactive Brokers Bond Marketplace, you can access over 1 million global bonds, including government, corporate, and municipal bonds, all in one place. With IBKR's bond search tool, finding and comparing yields against other brokers has never been easier, streamlining your investment decisions. Plus, you can trade U.S. Treasuries around the clock 5 days a week, allowing you to react to market news and economic events whenever they happen. Enjoy bond trading with no markups or built-in spreads and low transparent commissions, which can help improve your returns. Rated a top online broker, Interactive Brokers has won awards from Barron's, Investopedia, Stockbrokers.com, and has been Benzinga's number one overall online broker for bonds 4 years in a row. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC. Visit IBKR.com/bonds and start trading today.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
September's here. Yep, not usually the best seasonal trends for stocks. A question. Diversification. What is it and why do I need it? Active management and passive strategies, a quick primer on the subjects, all this, and much more on episode number 885 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to another great episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for joining me this week. Every week that is available where we have a brand new show, usually some guests, not this show, because we have some important things to get to. But there are some important things out there that are also going on. Obviously, we know about it. We read the various news. We hear it. We listen to it. We watch it. But today we're going to be getting into a really important, I would even say a crucial topic for probably both novice and seasonal investors, seasoned investors also, an area of importance because you never know what's exactly going to happen. Let's face it. The fact is the markets can be very kind and at the same time can be very rough. All depends on what the mood is like out there. You know, we've seen some really good things in the beginning and mid part of the year this year. Towards the end, things were looking a little peaked, picked up again. And obviously, we know what's going on. But the idea of diversification, we've talked about this before, but I wanted to get in depth into the discussion a little bit from a different tack than we had before, a more granular look at what is the whole point of diversification. And I do it because every time we do something like this, there's a lot of great feedback. And I know a lot of you are yearning for this kind of information. Exactly how do you do what we do? Because this is something that we do on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, always. We're setting up portfolios and we're looking for the opportunities where we can find the best investment overall, but yet at the same time, matching them up with other investments that have, I would say, characteristics that are not necessarily exact. In other words, we're finding investment opportunities that have uncorrelated movement to each other. Not necessarily opposite, but don't necessarily move in tandem. At the same time, I want to stop right there and mention something. I think it's important to really just get out with this point. And that is, there are times that diversification works amazingly well. Portfolio allocation, and you're looking for that real heightened level of returns that, while not everything may be working all the time exactly right, more often than not, they are. And what happens is you get a much smoother return over time. The point of diversification really is not to beat any particular index on a 1 month, a 6 month, or a 12 month basis. It's to actually give you the opportunity to stay with your investments, not get spooked out, not to say, I can't take it anymore, sell me out, I'm done. Because if you diversify a portfolio correctly, what you could do is limit the downside risk. By limiting the downside risk, what you get is the opportunity to feel better about where you are and therefore stick to the plan. And your long-term objective and your outcomes can be realized. So that's really some of the most important parts of the why. Now, how and what exactly is this diversification, this portfolio allocation, this portfolio risk management, and why is it so important for your investment strategy? Well, let's get into it. Let's start with the basic question of, well, what is diversification? And in its simplest terms, trying to bring this down to everybody that's listening, we get this, you know, really throw out some very fancy terms about covariance and things about standard deviation. Forget that. Throw it out. Diversification essentially, in practice, is the spreading of your investments across a various group of assets to reduce risk. It's the idea that not putting all your eggs in one basket can benefit you. And by doing so, you can protect your portfolio from these significant losses that oftentimes are seen if maybe one particular investment doesn't do well. One particular part of your portfolio. Because what will happen is, in a lot of circumstances, when you have a significant amount of concentration of your portfolio in one investment or another, or maybe in one sector or another, you could do very well. But there are times where it hurts like heck. So if we know and understand about the whole point of what is diversification, the question is really why. And we touched on that a little bit, but let's get into the nitty-gritty details of this, shall we? So the first thing we could probably identify is the idea of risk management. And when we look at that, we think about some of the benefits of diversification, gets to the heart of this whole idea of managing your risk. I know that's a backwards and forward statement, right? What is risk management? Well, it's managing your risk. Well, no, because different asset classes like stocks and bonds and real estates, commodities, for example, often perform differently under the same economic conditions. For example, you can think about when a stock falls. Oftentimes, historically at least, bond prices might rise. People are looking for safety. They're getting away from the risk asset, moving into a safety trade. So diversifying your investments can help smooth out returns and reduce essentially the volatility of your portfolio. That's what gets us all scared. It's not the little movements here or there. It's the big movements, the volatility, it's the continued pressure of and the thought that, oh my God, I'm going to lose all my money. The next thing, why diversify, is because we want to have what's called optimized returns. So while basic diversification aims to minimize the risk, it can also enhance potential returns. And you do this by investing in a mix of assets, not just a mix of investments like, oh, I'll take these five stocks, now I'm diversified. No, you have to look at this as a mixture of assets that have differing positions in sectors, in industries, and sometimes some may perform exceptionally well and maybe others won't. But you could optimize your returns by ensuring that you have the best of the best. Now, if you're just doing stock investing, you can look at all the different sectors out there and you can say, okay, who are the best in all these different sectors and industries? I'll invest in that. You could also say, you know what? I think when I look at the charts or look at the fundamentals that I'm making this up hypothetically, that international investing in the area of developing markets may be a great place to be right now. So I have that in my portfolio. And if I know that interest rates are coming down, maybe I want to put real estate in that portfolio and some commodities. On the other hand, you may say, Well, I'm really concerned about the long term. And these are long term trends. These are not just short term trends. I'm really concerned about the long term trend in the area of healthcare over the next 4 or 5 years. Maybe I'll lighten up that position and maybe I'll put a larger position on with utilities. Again, I'm making this up as we go here. But if we have risk management, we want optimized returns, parts of diversification and why do it. We also want protection against market volatility because we know that markets can be unpredictable. No question about that. I don't think anybody out there that's listening right now is saying, no, that's not true. They're very predictable. Yeah, I'll tell you. Truth be told, they're very predictable, very long term. They're not predictable under the short term scenarios, maybe even midterm. So when we look at this, diversified portfolios are often better equipped to handle market fluctuations because the positive performance in some investments can offset the negative performance of others. This is the flower garden that we always talk about. And I mentioned as we got into this, the other point that's really important is minimizing concentration risk because it occurs when you have this beautiful stock that's run up and now it's 40% of your portfolio. That's fantastic. It's great. We love when that happens. But the problem occurs when, not when it's running up 40%, when it's running down 40%. Do you have a position that's 30% of your portfolio and it's down 40%? Oh, that's ugly. So when a significant portion of your investments is tied to a single asset or a small group of assets, you could have some problems. So we want to get away from that. We want to get away from the exposure you have to higher risk if those particular investments perform poorly. So diversifying your portfolio, in a sense, helps mitigate concentration risk by essentially spreading your investments across various assets. Again, a lot of repetition of the same points I'm making here, right? You want to have risk management, lower concentration risk. We don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. All right, so that's the basics of it. So the next question then comes up, well, how do I do this? Well, the first thing is spreading across asset classes. Spreading across asset classes. The asset classes are the important part there. Don't just invest in stocks. Consider bonds and real estate. Consider mutual funds and ETFs that have different areas and different sectors covered. And maybe even other investment vehicles, maybe hedge funds. Each asset class reacts differently to economic changes. What happens with bonds, what happens with stocks, commodities, real estate, alternatives, all those things have differing overall returns and performance. What I mean performance, returns are one thing where you get a certain performance, you know, return over time. Performance is what they're doing on the interim basis. That can help balance your portfolio. Now, we want to diversify within asset classes. So you're investing in stocks. Don't just buy shares from one company or one industry. Spread the risk, as I mentioned. Get some technology, but the top plays there. Healthcare, top plays there. Consumer goods, top plays there. Or on another way to look at it is looking at geographies, domestic and international. You could do this with individual stocks. If you want to have asset classes outside of that, you want to look for. So this diversification in each asset class, it's diversification by asset class. You have stocks, bonds, real estate. Inside the stocks in the asset classes, we have, okay, we have, let's say, going down to the industries or even sectors, how much in healthcare, how much in biotech, right? Healthcare is one giant umbrella, then we have biotech. The other thing we want to do is consider the investment style. Now, this is interesting because we can change up how we diversify. On one hand, I just mentioned we could diversify within asset classes. Now, here what we could do is do a big picture diversification. We can mix different investment styles, such as you've heard me talk about it, growth and value. Growth stocks oftentimes and might provide a higher potential return, but come with higher risk. Value stocks tend to be more stable, but with potentially lower returns. Now, another way to do this in the area of diversification is spread it out. Now, not just spread it out on asset class, I mean really spread it out. And how do you do that? You could use mutual funds and ETFs. Let me pause for a moment. When we use these kinds of instruments, what we're doing is looking for a broad-based approach. Not a shotgun, but broad-based. When we use individual stocks, we're looking to get very refined. Using mutual funds and ETFs will give us exposure to different areas, and they inherently provide diversification because they're a pool of money from many investors that buy diversified portfolios of stocks, bonds, or other securities, commodities. It could be all sorts of different things. It could be a very focused type of investment, or it could be a very diverse type of investment. When we're looking at diversifying the portfolio, there are so many different ways to do it. All really comes down to what's your risk level, what's your time commitment that you want to provide to this whole thing, and what are your goals? Are you willing to take more risk on to get to a certain place? Okay, well, have a less diversified portfolio, invest in equities, let's say, in a specific area, and maybe a much lower amount of other things like bonds or real estate. If you want to have a smoother ride, we broad brush approach the positioning within, let's say, mutual funds, ETFs. Each has their pluses and minuses. And we diversify in areas and lean and tactfully shift into different investment components depending on the outlook over the near term and midterm and long term. The other thing that you need to do when you enter into this process is the concept of regular rebalancing. Because diversification is not a single time task. What you need to do is review things. It's not a set it and forget it. You need to rebalance your portfolio back to where the model should be. That will help you to gather the gains and get rid of some of the problem areas potentially as you're reviewing. But as you're rebalancing, you could actually say, I still like this area, has not performed as well. I'll take some of my profits and I'll put it into the areas that I think are going to do really well. This keeping to a particular balance, let's say it's quarterly, semi-annually, or even annually, is a really smart thing to do. It makes sure that you're aligned with your risk tolerance and investment goals. So you sell off the overperforming assets, buying underperforming assets, maintaining the desired asset allocation inside of the entirety of this area of diversification. So let's wrap that all up in a nice, tidy little package, nice and neat, put a bow on it. Diversification. It's a fundamental strategy for managing risk. And at the same time, it's a strategy for optimizing returns. And by spreading your investments across various asset classes and also sectors and geographies and even therefore in investment styles, you can help protect your portfolio against market volatility and in essence, minimize the concentration risk, which then enhances your chances of achieving long-term financial success. Does that make sense? I think so. A lot going on there. A lot going on there. But if we think about all the different ways to diversify, they all still come down to the same thing. It's making sure that you're not sitting there exposed in the cold without a jacket, that you have some backup, that you have a plan, that you are utilizing, implementing, and then reviewing, and then rebalancing and making sure that you are researching and finding the where you want to be for not only today, tomorrow, and the next 6 months, but for the long term overall. Diversification can help with all of that. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about another part of the process that goes right along with diversification, especially for people who invest in pooled assets, mutual funds, ETFs. We're going to talk about the two areas that you need to understand about. We're going to go through them pretty quickly, but things that have been at the center of a huge fight and I would say an academic war for years. But I think that there need not be that kind of stress with all this, because I think both sides are right. We'll get to that. But first, let's talk about Interactive Brokers. In particular, I want to talk about the Portfolio Analyst, which is powered by Interactive Brokers, which helps sophisticated investors like you understand the health of their complete financial portfolio. Portfolio Analyst is free and easy to use personal finance software that creates a consolidated view of banking and brokerage and credit card accounts. You can compare your consolidated portfolio against more than 200 benchmarks or even create customized benchmarks for analyzing performance. Calculate time and money-weighted rates of return and use Portfolio Analyst for forecasting. Sign up for free at PortfolioAnalyst.com. Okay, so I mentioned two different areas that are really important. I mentioned that it goes along hand-in-hand with diversification, because it does. It really does. And what is that? It's the idea of active and passive management. And the question is, which strategy is right for you? And I'm not going to stop there. I'll say, and maybe give away the punchline, both strategies are probably right. There's a financial debate that's been going on for a long time in the investment world. And the idea of the advocates on one side saying that, oh, this is the best way to do it because of that or this. And the advocates on the other saying, no, you can't do that. We've outperformed because of this or that. And I don't know. There are some respective benefits and drawbacks to each. But let's get into the idea of active management first. Oftentimes seen inside of mutual funds versus passive, which are usually ETFs. But now, all of a sudden, you're seeing the passive management be explored very significantly in mutual funds. And ETFs are picking up and starting to come out with active management. So they've been getting into each other's turf. But active management itself, let's start with that. It involves a hands-on approach to portfolio management, where portfolio managers will actively make investment decisions with the goal of outperforming a specified benchmark index. And what these managers do is use a whole slew of research methodologies. They'll use market forecasts, they'll use technical analysis, they'll use their own judgment, they'll use fundamentals, they'll use momentum trade, they'll use all sorts of different things. You have to know which ones you're getting into. But essentially, an active management process itself is something that there is a manager that is looking at each individual security, and they're figuring out from one research mechanism to the other what they want to do with that, buy, sell, or just not. So here are some of the benefits of active management. You have the benefit of potential of higher returns, because a lot of skilled managers, of course, can identify undervalued securities. They can look for the market opportunities, and they can, in fact, outperform the market. And yes, there are a lot of studies that give you the other side of that we'll get to. Flexibility. Active managers don't have to necessarily stick to an index and just be like, okay, that's all we're going to invest in. They can adapt and change and depending on market conditions, make strategic adjustments within their portfolios. And that's kind of a cool thing, because they can do that very quickly. We've seen that happen many times as markets change. All of a sudden, when we have these managers that are vol, they invest more, volatility is less. They invest less if volatility is more. And what they'll do is they'll actively pull money out of the markets as volatility picks up. The other thing that you can have as a benefit of active management is risk management, where managers can essentially implement strategies to hedge against market downturns or exploit market inefficiencies. That's what they do. So they try to do. They're looking for those inefficiencies in markets and looking for holes where they can wedge in there and they can make a difference, or in fact, just ride a wave. Now, there's some drawbacks to all this too. And both sides, both active and management, have their benefits and their detractors. I'll tell you right now. In active management, usually have higher costs than passive. Active managers will charge you more due to the cost of research and frequent trading, and maybe even the cost of running their business. Now, sometimes that doesn't matter. You can't say that cost is the only factor. A lot of people look at this. That's just dumb. Let's say that you had an active manager that would return 40% per year net, but they're charging you 20% a year, 30% a year. But net, you're getting 40%. What do you say to that? Oh, no, no, no. No, no. I'm not going to pay the 20-30%. I don't care. It's too much. Excuse me. He's giving you 40% net over the last 10 years. That doesn't matter. I don't like that he's charging me a lot of money. But you've only would have only made 9% being invested in this investment, and it was only 0.1% fee. That's fine. I don't want to pay the manager fee. Now, that kind of stupidity runs high in some circumstances, but don't be one of those people that gets taken away from the fact that what is the net return, even though the manager may be charging a little bit higher fee, because maybe there are some things like in the areas of emerging markets that it costs more to run those funds. But again, one of the drawbacks of active management is that they have higher fees. What other things? Well, I guess we have to get to the obvious one is market underperformance. Because despite the expertise and all the years that they've done and the research abilities and their smarts and their intelligence, the people they have in their offices, many active managers fail to consistently outperform the benchmarks after accounting for their fees. That's true. Those that are so absorbed in just beating a benchmark are oftentimes going to be closet benchmarkers. And what they're going to do is they're just going to invest in the in an index with a little bit of an extra flair on it, but sometimes that doesn't work out so well. The other problem with active management is that you have manager risk. Because the success of an actively managed fund often hinges on the skill and decisions of the individual manager. So that adds an element of risk right there into your circumstance. Now, when we look at the other side, switching over for a moment and looking at the area of passive management, what is that and how does that work? Well, when you look at passive management, you have to think of an index replication oftentimes or some kind of other factor orientation, something that is going to be static. But oftentimes a passive manager or passive investment, their aim is to replicate the performance of a specific benchmark index like the S&P 500, the Russell 2000, the MSCI EFA, the Barclays Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Market Index. Instead of attempting to beat the market, passive managers invest in the same securities, the same investments that the underlying index has, seeking to match its performance. By doing so, you don't need a lot of research because all you have to do is look. Can I please have the makeup and the constituent list of the index? Thank you. And I'll invest in that and rotate it and change it accordingly. And there are some benefits, there's no question. That's why we like a lot of ETFs in our portfolio. We like a balance, by the way. It's really important to understand this. I'm not going to get into this whole discussion right now, but understanding when and where to put a mutual fund into play versus an ETF, very important consideration. So benefits of passive management. First, we have lower costs because lower fees, less research, fewer transactions, simplicity. Investing in passive funds, well, it's straightforward, right? It's easy. It requires much less decision-making and it makes it much easier sometimes for investors. They don't have to think. It's like, okay, I got the S&P 500 fund. What's it doing? What's it not? Versus I have the ABC growth fund and you're not exactly sure where it's doing and what it's doing and why all of a sudden it's not keeping up with a particular index. And the other thing that I guess could be a benefit, or at least I would classify as a benefit, is consistent performance. Because by tracking an index, passive funds often provide reliable returns that match the market's performance, which then avoids the problem you have with active investing, which is underperformance relative to a benchmark. So let's talk about the downside. What are the drawbacks? Because there's got to be some. Yes, there are. The first one is limited flexibility. Passive funds are tied to their benchmark index. That's what they have to invest in by prospectus. And they can't adapt to changing market conditions or even capitalize on market opportunities. And I'll give you an example of that. If you have two bond funds, one is a passive bond fund that just tracks an index. One is a bond fund that is active and it has a benchmark of a particular index. And it could be the same index as the benchmarks. One is required to stick on the benchmark. One is just looking at performance comparatively. Now, all of a sudden, a day comes and the bond market sells off like crazy. People decide to pull money out of their accounts. The index funds need to make sure they keep the balance, and they just indiscriminately sell all sorts of things within the portfolio just to make sure they can meet demand for the redemptions. Whereas a active manager may say, well, you know, we have to do the same thing, but we could be a little bit more discerning of what we're selling. In fact, there are some bargains out there because these ETFs are selling like crazy. Let's go pick some of those up and put it inside our portfolio. Really interesting differential right there. So this area of limited flexibility and how they're tied to an index makes for passive or these passive indices a little less desirable in certain circumstances, and particularly in certain sector style investing. That's an important consideration also, is where we are doing this in, what sector we're using, and how is that playing out. The other drawback is there's no potential for outperformance because passive funds are not really ever going to outperform. They're just going to match it, minus fees. And finally, market exposure. Passive investors are fully exposed to market downturns since they hold all the securities in the index. And again, the manager of that strategy is not necessarily looking to pull you in or out of anything. So between the two, which is right for you? Well, choosing between both active and passive depends on you, your investment goals, your risk tolerance level, your time horizon, your personal preferences. There's a lot of things go into this. But risk tolerance and return goals are really important to understand. Because if you're comfortable with higher risk and seek the potential for higher returns, active management, or whether it's a fund or just buying individual stocks on your own, or with a portfolio manager like what we do with our TDI managed growth strategy, combine that strategy with our global allocations, gives you the full roundhouse of all of it, right? It gives you the active management for individual equities, and then it gives you the portfolio diversification management with rebalancing and diversification within sectors, asset classes, and industries that give you a full line of ETFs, mutual funds, and then stocks if you combine it all. But it depends on where you want to be. It depends on your risk. If you prefer stability and predictable returns, maybe just passive management could be a better fit. And that's something we design depending on your risk factors. That's something that you could look at. If you're not going to do it and you're just like, I'm doing this on my own, I don't want to have anybody else involved here, that's fine. Maybe it's something that you have to think about of how much time you want to devote to this. Active management will require much more time devotion than purely passive management. There's also cost considerations. Consider how much you're willing to pay in management fees. Passive funds are generally more cost-effective, which can significantly help over the long term. Then you have a question of what's your investment horizon. If you have a long-term horizon, maybe you're less concerned with short-term market fluctuations, and passive investing can be advantageous. And then the other thing I mentioned and I talked about is your engagement level. Active management is going to require much more involvement and understanding of market dynamics and investments and technical investing and fundamentals and really understanding things about currencies, while passive management is more hands-off. So if you want a simpler approach, you could just deal with that. What's the bottom line here? What's my take? What's my real insight? What's my thinking on this? I think both active and passive management have their merits and drawbacks, but they both have a position inside most portfolios. Active management offers the potential for higher returns, flexibility, but again, costs are a little bit higher. Passive management provides lower costs, simplicity, and consistent market returns, but lacks the ability to adapt to market changes or even outperform an index. So ultimately, what many investors find is a combination of both strategies known as core satellite approach to be effective, right? We have a core of our diversified portfolios, and then we pick up positions outside of that orbit in an active arena to then match up and utilize in the portfolio so that we have all sorts of different things working at the same time. And this involves a core investment and passive strategy for stability, and then supplemented by active. Again, it all comes down to the flower garden once again. If you heard me say it once, you've heard me say it 1,000 times, that what we want to have is something in bloom at all different times of the year. Just like we want our investments to something to be working at any given time of the investment cycle. So I hope that provides a really good insight into the idea of active and passive management, diversification, and why it's good for you. Every once in a while, we need to get back to this and not just talk about what's going on in the markets or the election or the yen carry trade, you know, and get an insight from a guest. We need to understand this is the core to investing. All the other stuff is really interesting and we need to know it, but this is how we actually run the money. This is how we do it. This is how you should be doing it. Thanks for your time today. It's the end of summer right now. So we're going to end on this note that we have a lot more coming up that's pretty exciting. We are seeing guests that we haven't talked to in a while, some that we've talked to recently, and we have a lot booked for the next several months along with some of the best people in the industry to give us insights and help us with our investing, to help us get our long-term goals in shape, make sure that each and every one of us is financially secure. And our family is financially secure. That's what it's all about here. That's what we're doing on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.